Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, spring break is coming up, and we talk about travel safety. We talk about the book Beyond Blue and White, The Hidden History of Delftware and the Women Behind the Iconic Ceramic. We discuss the book The Many Lives of Anne Frank, the book The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems, and we talk about the importance of early detection for breast cancer and how bra fittings can play a role.
Tis the time to travel, all four seasons, but specifically for spring break, I bet you will. So let's do it safely, timely, and more. We speak with you on behalf of our wonderful Gerald R. Ford International Airport, Heidi Grunboom on behalf of the tips and more, and I bet you'll ask me to get to the airport early. Good morning to you, Heidi.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. Looking forward to this conversation because I think we do lose half of West Michigan, which is, well, could be a good thing, but we want you to travel safely, timely, and more. How do you feel about next week?
Yes, we are expecting another busy travel time. This is one of our busiest travel times of the year, so we're always ready to welcome the travelers. We're so grateful to all of our teams who are here helping the airport runs smoothly and get people off to their destinations. So this year we are tracking to see about 175,000 passengers between starting kind of yesterday until April 13th. So it's a busy time for us. The busiest days will be that Friday, April 3rd, and then coming back on Sunday, April 12th. That's about 14,000 passengers each of those days that we'll see coming through the airport. So again, we always just remind people to come 2 hours ahead of their scheduled departure time just so they can find a parking spot, check their bag, get to their gate, maybe grab a coffee before they escape to some of the warmer weather.
That is half the key, is that low stress. Let's get the question out of the way, the elephant in the room. How are my lines in TSA as we speak?
Our TSA lines are currently as normal, so usually we see, like, on our website 5 minutes or less. Still, sometimes with those peak periods, which happen oftentimes for those 7 a.m. flights, that kind of maybe makes it a little bit longer. So that's why we remind people to come early. To see those wait times, you can find that at grr.org. So that's just right on our homepage, along with parking space availability too. We have parking in our garages and also in our north lot and economy lot too, so you can see kind of the open spaces there as well.
Thank you for that, again, real-time reminder. Is tomorrow, Friday, Passenger Appreciation Day?
Yes, Passenger Appreciation Day. Again, this is the day where we see a lot of our travelers heading off to spring break, so that's just a day we like to celebrate and thank our passengers. We'll have some live music. So in the morning, there'll be stringed instruments. And then later in the afternoon, we'll have some Hawaiian tropical music as well. And then a visit from our well-loved West Michigan therapy dogs. So if you see a dog in a blue vest, be sure to say hi. They're there to welcome you and just be friendly, a stress-free space for you. So we also have costume characters, and then our new mascot, Jerry the Jet, will also be making an appearance as well.
All cool. And because passengers are appreciated, no doubt. Other 101s, remind me, we are not taking our shoes off anymore.
Correct. Yep. And then also for anything, if you're curious about like sunscreens or certain liquids, you can go to TSA's website. They have a page called What Can I Bring? So if you search that, it has all helpful tips on kind of those questions that travelers may have. And then if you're going through security checkpoint, again, just that those liquids remain under 3.4 fluid ounces.
Yep, I had to lose my hairspray this past trip. Heidi, what about the real ID and having this?
Yes, we encourage all passengers to have their real ID. So if it has that star in the corner, then they are good to go. If not, to have some sort of passport or other form of ID too. since now there is that fee for if you don't have your real ID, there's a $45 fee to get it on site and work with TSA through that. So make sure you have the proper form of identification, and all that information can be found on tsa.gov.
Heidi, also, what about traveling with animals these days?
Yes, traveling with animals. So we ask that passengers rely on their airline. So if you're traveling with a pet, make sure you go to your airline's website to make sure that you're following their rules and regulations as well, since it varies from airline to airline.
What else is important as we travel this next week, including packing our patients? How about the kids? What do the kids need?
Yes, we have all kinds of amenities, too, for kids and travelers as well. So there's a pre- and post-security kids port play area. So the pre-security one is located right by security screening checkpoint. So you can utilize that. And then there's also one located just right after security as well. So while they're waiting to, or before they board their flight, if they need to run some extra miles, they can do that in that area. And then we also have a sensory room too, that's located right at the beginning of Concourse A. So for any of those travelers who are more stressed or may have some sensory sensitivities, they're welcome to utilize that space. You just push the button and they'll let you right in. There's an airplane simulation area there. There's a more relaxing area, more active zone if you need to get some energy out as well. So that's a great space for those travelers as well.
And what about accommodations as far as I've seen people ask, can I get a drink of coffee before I, if I'm going to get to the airport 2 hours early, perhaps I want to have a sandwich. That's all available after I get through TSA?
Yes. Yep. We have a lot of great dining options as well. So things from even Madcap Coffee to Nantucket Bakery, that's all offered at Blue Bridge Market. We've got Uccello's, Freddy's, Bell's, Firehouse Subs. So a lot of great options as well.
All right. I ask you one more time, details for making sure the trip is as smooth as it can be. What's your number one hint, and Heidi?
I think just so that if you want a smooth experience, just make sure you give yourself that plenty of time getting through security as well, so that 2 hours before, if you're curious about your flight status, you can also just visit your airline's website or mobile app as well, or chat with a ticketing agent. We're here. We're happy to help as well. So if you see anyone around with a badge or that looks like an employee, we're always happy to help you with your journey.
Great. Okay. Last minute question again. Tomorrow's Passenger Appreciation Day. How do I find out more information about TSA and more?
You can find that on grr.org.
All right. Always ask where Heidi's going to travel next, but I know probably not next week. You've got work to do. Thank you, Heidi, on behalf of the good work you and yours at our Gerald R. Ford International Airport. Do take care.
Thank you.
Well, this conversation will perk up your ear because it has something to do with Delftware. Beyond Blue and White, the hidden history of Delftware and the women behind the iconic ceramic, Genevieve Wheeler Brown. I bet you would like to make a trip to our Holland, Michigan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely. It's really on the top of my list. I'm dying to go. See all those tulips? I can't wait.
Good. Well, you are now on the record for that. But obviously, you've been to Michigan, a University of Michigan grad, so you know the likes of our Four Seasons. But more into you, an NPR editor's pick, and of course, Beyond Blue and White, you've done some homework. Genevieve, why your interest?
So I'm a decorative art advisor and a writer. So for over 30 years, and I spent more than a decade at Christie's in New York and in London, including some time on the Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah.
And so it all started, the book started in the summer of 2019, because out of the blue, I got a call from the chair of an art and collections committee of a women's organization that was founded during the Gilded Age.
and it's called the National Society of Colonial Dames. And they wanted me to take a look at a small part of their expansive collection at their headquarters of their Delftware. It's a private townhouse in New York's Upper East Side. And I really have to admit, Shelley, I thought I was going to see a handful of objects, but when I walked in, what greeted me was astonishing. It was a rare cache of more than 75 pieces of 17th and 18th century Delftware. So Beyond Blue and White is really, it's part art history, and it's a part blue and white detective story.
Cool. And it's been named an NPR Here and Now Editor's Pick, the art newspaper's book bag selection, and received glowing reviews. So that is cool. And yes, your wonderful career thus far, where you've held the objects, the like of fakes, Stradivari violins to gold mountain eggs, gold mounted eggs. But I digress. All right, more into your work, Beyond Blue and White. What is something we here in the Holland area need to know about this Delftware that you have researched?
Gosh, well, Delftware, I mean, as a lot of people from Holland probably know, like when I say Delftware, you probably picture like one of the square Dutch tiles, or maybe one of those plates with flowers and birds, or maybe some of those iconic, the towers, those beautiful pyramidal tulip vases with spouts. But Delftware is really a lot more. There are three, main kinds of ceramics in the world. There's porcelain, stoneware, and earthenware. And earthenware is the oldest, and it probably developed over 20,000 years ago. It has soft clay, it's porous, it's soft. Now, Delftware is tin-glazed earthenware, which is to say it's made by a technique that began in the Middle East as a way to imitate Chinese porcelain, that luminous, non-porous ceramic protected by the Chinese by the 8th century. So when you dip earthenware in tin glaze, it suddenly is watertight and it looks refined. And on that bright surface, the painters add a decoration, most often that cobalt, which fired into that brilliant blue we all recognize. So that's Delftware. It's everyday clay that's really been transformed into something extraordinary. And it was made in Delft from about 1620 to the mid-19th century.
Let's zone in on your tagline, the women behind the iconic ceramic.
So, yeah, it's what's incredible is that in researching this collection, 5 years across America, England, and the Netherlands, I uncovered how these beautiful objects, they carry actually hidden stories of some pretty amazing women. I mean, these are from the makers themselves, to patrons, collectors, historians, cultural influencers, and even in the 19th century museum founders. But the Dutch themselves, I mean, what's pretty incredible is that the Dutch had themselves in the Dutch Republic in the 17th and 18th century, they had a really different attitude towards women compared to other European countries at the time. I mean, women were active in commerce across the board. They were allowed to inherit equally as their brothers. They were allowed to go to school with boys. They were financially literate. They were taught as young girls how to balance the books. They had financial literacy. I mean, this was pretty mind-boggling for Europeans in the 17th and 18th centuries. And actually still today, because I think people forget.
Again, don't forget to pick up your copy of right in our own backyard, Beyond Blue and White, The Hidden History of Delftware and the Women Behind the Iconic Ceramic, Genevieve Wheeler Brown, Michigan grad, and beyond. What other story would you like to share when it comes to what you find and what you present?
Well, I really think that this collection that I researched, that it's really a doorway. It's my hope that people, when they spot a piece of Delftware, whether it's in a museum or maybe it's something in your own family, that you might see it a little differently. It's not just a beautiful art, but it's also a vessel for stories, for family stories, for women's stories. It's a tangible link to centuries of hidden ingenuity and ambition. And I think that it can really open an entire world when you choose to look beyond surfaces.
And back to Antiques Roadshow. What would be a strong memory from your experience?
Oh my gosh! You know, it's an incredible experience. It is a marathon experience. I don't know if you get a sense of that. You are looking at objects and evaluating from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and you walk out of there with losing your voice. And I'd say a number of fake Stradivari violins would often come in. And so that's which is actually a great story of objects in general, because, you know, in the late 19th century, Sears and Roebuck made a Stradivari model violin, which was mass produced using German violins, and they had fake labels in them. So a lot of musical instruments came in the door through the Antiques Roadshow. But it's a great story.
That is wonderful, as is yours. What's the future of Delftware?
You know, I think what's interesting about Delftware is that every century it has an incredible boomerang-like resurgence. And I have to say, I think we're in the middle of one right now. I think everywhere we look, from Dutch tiles to plates, it, like works of interior designers, it's hot. So I think it's alive and well.
All right. Well, looking forward to your visit. When you do visit Holland, Michigan, back to Michigan, you will come. And, of course, looking forward to more reading of your book, Beyond Blue and White. How do we find out more information, Genevieve?
Well, a couple of things. I'm on Instagram at E. Wheeler Brown, and then the book's website, beyondblueandwhite.com. Lots of information, glossaries, events. You can learn more and reach out to me.
What was your degree from Michigan?
Absolutely. Art history undergraduate.
You are using your degree. There you are.
It's where it all began, actually, really. It began in Michigan.
As is that a whole nother story. Thank you for dropping the name Beyond Blue and White, your latest, Genevieve Wheeler Brown. You take care.
Thanks, Shelley.
Next guest has done her research and reminds us of the many lives of Anne Frank. Award-winning author Ruth Franklin on the line presenting this paperback publication of the acclaimed book, Many Lives of Anne Frank, out where all fine books are sold. I look forward to this conversation. Good morning to you, Ruth.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, boy. We can't, I'm going to use a double negative, not talk any less of Anne Frank, as, again, you present on the front cover that wonderful picture of that smile and, of course, that soul that was lost to us, but leaving such a legacy. Why your interest in Anne Frank, Ruth?
Well, you know, like so many of us, I, of course, read Anne Frank's diary as a child, and I even was privileged to visit the Anne Frank house, and I thought that I knew her story. And, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, the diary started resurfacing in the news, especially in the context. Sometimes there would be stories about missing pages that had been rediscovered, or stories about her father potentially censoring the diary. And then meanwhile, you know, as you suggest, she remains consistently a figure of huge fascination in our culture with her iconic face, which is on billboards and works of art and everywhere else. And I wanted to put those two pieces together, digging deeper into the actual process that went into her writing her diary, while also understanding what makes her such an enduring figure for so many people.
Since described as an innovative biography, and I personally did also go through her home, and it was obviously educational, but also chilling with the silence as we were issued. You explore the transformation of Anne Frank from ordinary teen to icon. Give us some background here.
Well, Anne was born in Frankfurt, Germany, in a nice middle-class German Jewish family. And just after Hitler came to power, they fled to the Netherlands, where they took up residence as refugees. And, you know, for the most of her childhood, she really was in every way a typical girl. And we can see this in the first pages of her diary, where she's writing about her birthday party and her crushes on boys and gossip about her girlfriends and so many ordinary subjects. And it's really not until the family goes in hiding, which happened just after Anne's 13th birthday, just a few weeks after, that her life takes this turn for the extraordinary.
Yes. And can we tell that in her diaries? Do we see a Sunday writing turning into a different Monday writing?
Well, that is the complicated part, because many of your listeners might not realize, as many readers don't know, that Anne actually edited her own diary for publication. So the version that we all read as children, and you know, still do now, is actually her rewritten diary. And what happened was that late during the period that the family were in hiding, in March 1944, after they'd been in hiding for almost 2 years, Anne heard a Dutch minister from the government on the radio calling for citizens to save their documents of the war years for inclusion in a future national archive. And she realized that, of course, she had just such a document, but also that the way she'd written her diary wouldn't work for a public audience. It was too personal. It had too much that was unique to her and not quite enough about the persecution of the Jews. And so she went back to the beginning and rewrote it from the start with an eye toward just that public audience.
What's another story? Does she write about her sister? Does she write about her friends?
She does. You know, there are, I think, many of the most poignant passages in the diary are when she writes about her loneliness, when she's thinking about the friends that she left behind and wondering what has happened to them, because they don't get much news in the annex about what has happened to their friends and neighbors. And she, of course, she does write about her sister as well, her sister Margot, who is about 2 years older, and who everybody else in the annex, her parents, as well as the other adults in hiding with the Frank family, everyone seems to have thought that Margot was quite perfect, in contrast to Anne, who was known to be kind of sassy and not as studious as her sister. She thought she wasn't as beautiful as her sister. In general, she compared herself quite unfavorably and sometimes felt quite jealous of her.
The Many Lives of Anne Frank by author, award-winning author, Ruth Franklin on the line. Is this a reveal of how Anne, and you touched on this, Ruth, has been understood and misunderstood, both as a person and as an idea?
Absolutely. So the first part of the book is a biography that gives a lot of history and social context for Anne's life. And the second part is really a cultural history of the idea of Anne Frank, where I talk about the different ways in which she's been read and looked at and, you know, examined ever since the diary was first published in Dutch in 1948 and then in English, where it became, you know, a worldwide bestseller starting in 1952. And there, you know, there are debates that have swirled around it ever since then, especially to the extent to which we should highlight Anne's Jewishness and, you know, the exceptional nature of what happened to her as a victim of the Nazis versus understanding her as a kind of universal teenager and a symbol of all kinds of persecution.
That's a conversation about Anne Frank. Her life explored from ordinary teen to icon in the work by award-winning author Ruth Franklin. Had to let her go early due to some technical issues from where she was speaking, as they say. The Many Lives of Anne Frank had an opportunity to be in the Diary of Anne Frank on the stage of Civic way back when. So thanks, Bruce Tinker, for that opportunity. It was life-changing. Zach Rogo on the line. An important conversation we are to have. He's a poet, playwright, and educator. Let's talk about your latest work, The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems on Aging. It's Good to Age. Zach, good morning to you.
Good morning, Shelley. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I guess that's my opinion. Is it good to age these days, Zach, in any form?
I think so. I think it's a time when seniors can look forward to years of healthy and vital experiences, and in fact, sometimes even enter into new relationships, as happened with me, as I recount in my book.
Thank you. Hence a tease of what we are to discuss. Of course, you are well educated in with your Master of Arts in English from City College, BA in English from Yale, and more, and certainly sharing your latest work when it comes to the Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and other poems on aging. This is described as a poetic look at love and romance after the age of 65. Tell me more here.
Well, to my surprise, Shelley, I found myself single at age 66, and I never thought that would happen, but it did, and it wound up being quite an experience. I went on the dating apps. I had 75 first dates, and I did not meet someone who became my life partner through the dating apps. I actually met a new life partner through a mutual interest in French literature.
You, I'm going to be all over the place just for a little bit until we zone in on more of your work, but you must have wanted to fall in love again after 66. Does there have to be a choice here?
What kind of choice?
Yeah. You're right. I mean, like, that's what we do. Tell me about the poem side of this opportunity to talk about your work. Is there poetry involved, and how important is that?
Well, for me, poetry is very important. It's a way of processing what's happening in my life, and there were so many changes happening at this point. It was partly the loneliness of being single again after a very long time, and the questions about whether I would find someone at that age. And then there was the experience of meeting a lot of different people and going on the dating apps, and then the experience of falling in love again and getting to know the family of my partner, because she had two grandchildren who were toddlers. So all of that is in my book, The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems on Aging, and also experiencing getting older and how that changes your body, how it changes love. All of that was an experience that I wanted to write about and somehow try to understand through the poems in this book.
Zach, tell me about Kama Sutra.
Yeah, so the Kama Sutra is an Indian sex manual, to be frank about it, but that's not really why I chose the title. In a way, it's kind of ironic, because when you're a senior, you can't do all these fabulous positions that you read about in the Kama Sutra, like the blue lotus and the peacock's foot and who knows what else. But I do think that passion is still an important thing when you're a senior. And so the book also deals with that, but more on the level of wanting connection and closeness and intimacy and release rather than a catalog of physical positions.
Yes. Talk to me a little bit about more on the single scene after not dating for 35 years. What my notes tell me, what you discovered on the single scene after not dating for 35 years?
That's correct, yes. Well, I discovered some of the etiquette of dating later in life when you're meeting other people who've been through relationships. For example, on my very first date, I got a kind of upbraiding by the woman who criticized me for saying negative things about my ex on a first date, and she said, "You're just presenting yourself as someone who has bad judgment." And I thought that was very insightful. So, you know, there were a lot of things I didn't know about what do you talk about on the first date that you don't, or what do you not talk about on the first date? You know, I think getting to know someone also involves a certain restraint. You know, you don't bear your worst confidences when you first meet someone. There's a kind of establishment of different connections and trust that happens when you first meet someone.
Yes. So I guess I'll ask the elephant in the room. For those over 65, do you recommend the dating apps?
Well, I would say I met a lot of remarkable people, and it was an interesting experience. I wouldn't discourage anyone from using the dating apps. It wasn't how I met someone, but I think many people do meet their partner that way. Certainly that's been the case with people I know very well.
And how much, again, in this stage, does the family matter?
Oh, I think it matters greatly, because it mattered a great deal to me that the partner that I ultimately found cared deeply about her family. That was something that I wasn't necessarily conscious of looking for, but when I found that, it really resonated for me, because it showed me that the person who became my partner had a deep heart, that she cared very much for other people, and that there was a web of family connections that both of us had that could meet each other and get to know one another.
Zach Rogo with us, poet, playwright, educator, author. His latest is out, The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems on Aging. 3-time Pushcart Prize for Poetry nominee. How are we doing in this world of poetry these days? What does poetry do for us?
Well, I think poetry is very different from every other art, Shelley, in that poetry has a kind of music that allows it to get past the barriers that we put up on a day-to-day basis that prevent us from feeling deeply, whether it's humor or other deep emotion. And that's what I love about poetry, that it connects directly to the human heart in a way that no other art form does, in my experience.
What would you like to close us with, Zach? I trust a hope for those over 65 looking for love?
Yes, I would say hope, for sure. And it's not always easy to form a relationship when you're older, because we are set in our ways at that age. But one thing that I do appreciate about finding my partner so later in life is that I realize what a miracle it is to find someone compatible who I love at this age. You know, I think I took those things somewhat for granted when I was younger.
Yes. You do give us a look at love in life's later age in our chapters. We appreciate this, described as a tender, mischievous new collection of poetry, and sharing a bit of your story. Zach Rogo, R-O-G-O-W, how do we find out more about your work?
Well, I have a website, zachrogo.com, zachrogow.com. And you can also Google the title of the book, The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems on Aging.
Okay. Has your partner read your book?
Oh, she read it all the way. She's my best and toughest critic.
All right. Thanks for this positive conversation. Kudos to you, Zach Rogo, and your latest, The Kama Sutra for Senior Citizens and Other Poems on Aging. Thank you. Only get the best. Heather Quay and Karima Nunez on the line. Let's talk about the reality that every 2 minutes in the U.S., a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer. It's a reminder, early detection matters. Let's talk about how my ladies are marking 25 years of Fit for the Cure with Susan G. Komen. And is it WACO, ladies? I'll start with you, Karima.
It's
WACO. I had a 50-50 there, and I lost it. All right, I appreciate both of you on behalf of WACO and anything that has fit in the word for it, and of course the Susan G. Komen organization. I'll stay with you, Karima. Tell me about this Fit for the Cure and why it's important.
So actually, this year marks 25 years of Waco's Fit for the Care partnership with Susan G. Komen. And this spring, we'll be hosting over 360 Fit for the Care events at department stores nationwide. So you'll come in, get a fitting, you'll make a purchase, and Waco then donates $5 to Susan G. Komen. It's actually a great way to just make an everyday bra fitting turn into some real support for breast cancer awareness.
And just off the cuff, if one has never heard of Susan G. Komen, just a primer here, if you would, Karima.
So it's a breast cancer awareness foundation, and we donate to it to just take care of patient services and just help with the overall benefit of breast cancer awareness.
Wonderful. Bringing you in, Heather, 8 in 10 women wearing the wrong size. Why does proper fit truly matter? I'll start with you, Heather, and then go to Karima.
Hi, yeah, so, I mean, 8 out of 10 women are wearing the wrong bra size. It is so important to get a bra fitting. There's so many women that haven't got one in years, if ever, and you want to feel comfortable in your bra. You're going to look better in your clothing, and you're going to feel supported and more confident wearing the right size bra. Yeah, most women are not wearing the right size bra.
Yeah, let's be real. What's your addition to that, Kareem?
So I would just say, signs you might need a bra fitting can be your strap slipping, a bra being rising, or just overall discomfort of a bra. You need a bra fitting at least once a year. And I promise you, Fit for the Care is a perfect reminder to do just that.
Well, Heather, let me ask you, how can someone actually take part this spring and make a real impact? We're hanging out here in West Michigan.
So if you go to fitforthecure.com, it's going to have all of the locations where we're going to be doing the event nationwide. So you can go there to see if where you live, there's an event near you. Anytime, you can always go into a department store that has Waco to get a bra fitting. But if you go during one of the events and you get a complimentary bra fitting and purchase a Waco bra, we will donate $5 to Susan G. Komen on your behalf. So that is fitforthecure.com is where you would go.
And Karima, again, I opened with every 2 minutes a woman in the United States is diagnosed with breast cancer. On behalf of Susan G. Komen, of course, early detection key here.
Yes, early detection saves lives. I'm telling you, a bra fitting can make the world of difference. It's a game changer.
All right, there we are. It's important to discuss. What do you leave us with, Karima?
So I'll leave you with just make sure you're doing a bra fitting once a year. I promise you, it's a game changer. We'll give you new recommendations of styles just for you, specifically for your shape and size. We'll make you walk out with confidence and comfort. We're here for you.
You bet. And we're all of all shapes and sizes, so thank you for that. Where do we go in finality, Heather, for more information?
You'll want to go to fitforthecure.com.
As easy as that. Get fit, do the cure, and of course, get your early screenings done and your bra fitted. Over 400 nationwide events supporting Susan G. Komen's direct patient services. Thank you very much to you both, Karima and Heather. Take care.
Thanks for having us.
Your inspiration for the day, according to Helen Keller, I know she's made her presence in Grand Rapids way back when. The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart. There is your Thursday piece of advice, according to Helen Keller and my dog calendar. Thank you, Santa Claus. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Shelley Irwin. Have a great Thursday.